Yo, I'm David.
And I'm Colin.
He's Black.
He's Chicano.
And together, we're Brown Town.
And colleagues at Soapbox Productions and Organizing, a film and social activism nonprofit specializing in multimedia storytelling for structural social change.
Bourbon and Brown Town is an affiliate podcast of Soapbox that pairs critical analysis of media, culture, politics, and everyday happenings with the tastiest of spirits. With a Chicago focus, we unpack current events, social issues, and give personal insight into various topics with the occasional help of the most talented and creative activists, artists, filmmakers, academics, and social entrepreneurs.
So for this episode, sit back, sip something good, and enjoy.
Circles. I can't front on my circumference. The radius of my greatness is everyone who I fuck with. Circles. I can't front on my circumference. The radius of my greatness is everyone who I fuck with. Circles. I can't front on my circumference. The radius of my greatness is everyone who I fuck with. Circles. I can't front on my circumference. The radius of my greatness is everyone who I.
I'd like to welcome everyone to another installment of Bourbon and Brown Town. I am your co-host, David. Sitting, drinking. Excited to really get this conversation going, always with Colin. Colin, my dude, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing okay. Two things. One, I love how you always come in like a little different. Like you say the same thing, but it's always kind of like, sometimes you're kind of sad and so on. Sometimes you're like, yo, gang, what up? Woo. It's always like a little different. So I appreciate it. It's very in tune with like how you're feeling that day, which I just appreciate the authenticity and all that. I'm doing okay. It's been a weird day, dude. Like, it's, you know, I think with my personal life and what's happening with Soapbox right now is exciting. We're doing a lot of projects. We're growing. We have new folks on the team. It feels good. With all that brings a lot of work on everyone's plates, right? Which I think can be easy in the long run. So just dealing with like time management as a person is in its own thing. And then today, you know, we wake up to a young man in Minneapolis getting killed by police. As I turn on the TV while making breakfast to try to get more information on that police killing, I can't see information because the corporate news, is busy covering the George Floyd murder trial, Derek Chauvin on trial, and which they should be. But I'm like, I can't even see about the recent killing because y'all are covering the trial from the other high-profile killing. And then the Adam Toledo stuff is still happening in the city of Chicago. The teenager, the CPD killed, you know, 2 weeks back. And so Child. It's just like, yeah. it's just a lot. And with all this, as you know this, David, it's like I feel like I'm desensitized from A, just being a person in the world, person in America specifically, person doing movement work. So I know this is what they do, right? And I know that's how the PIC works. But like today it has got to me because all those things happening at the same time. It's also my dad's birthday, though, which is joyous and celebratory and happy.
Oh, birthday, Papa Hunter.
So I just got off a Zoom call with my family celebrating him. So it's just like a lot of conflicting, weird things happen at the same time. But all that is converging on today in this conversation. So I'm excited to talk about this topic with an amazing practitioner. And I think it's not a coincidence that we're talking about this today as an alternative to the world that we live in. So all that is to say, David, how are you?
Bro, I always love it how, like, even if we're, like, you know, earlier on in the early years, we'd, like, you know, we saw each other every day. But now that we don't, I still think the lives are still the same. You know, I know in our meeting earlier today, you know, I had that opening question. I was like, what's kind of inspiring you today? And I originally had a different answer than what I woke up to this morning, right? Because I woke up, you know, early than normal. And same shit, dude. You go online and I'm just like, you know, Dante from Minneapolis, you know, Brooklyn Center. And just anger, bro. Just like, it's like, and you're right. Cause it gets to a point where like, it's, we're desensitized. But even then, to me, I'm such an emotional person. And so someone who definitely feeds off of whatever is in my surroundings. And so on an immediate, you know, it's straight anger. And then understanding, you know, like, I would want to go out and burn some, you know what I'm saying? But that's, you know, there's more to it. And that's not the end all. And then listening to other folks in this conversation, thinking they know what they're talking about, you know, the cop was just doing their job. And like, you don't, you like, what the fuck are you talking, you know? And then I just got gunned down on 24th. You know, so it's like, bro, it's fucking nuts, dude. But I am, as you mentioned, I do think all these things happen in a way that is meant to be. And so here we are talking today about restorative justice, right? And what that really means. And I know I, you know, first heard of this in depth through Chicago Freedom School, right? And through Tony before he was doing his thing as executive director, and all the folks out there, and being one of the pillars in which they talk about, right? Restorative justice, transformative justice. But, you know, as it's also gained, you know, popularity, so to speak, over the decades, you know, it's not only a philosophy and a strategy, and we'll definitely dive into all these things, but definitely a way of life, right? And in a way in which we'll conceptualize things. And I think it's interesting when we're looking at like how things are centered here in the United States versus other countries, right? And as we've mentioned oftentimes, we're very far behind, even though we like to think we're not, you know. But as, you know, post George Floyd, you know, and as these other things keep happening, right, as these lives are being stolen, you know, we really look at and think about the best ways for us to move forward.
I come to this conversation with a lot of joy and a lot of excitement, because I feel like it's been, A, it's a long time coming. Facts. B, I think Michonne and Trap House and just the community around Trap House has came to me at a special time in my life, right? I was like finishing up or starting kind of Shy DNA and exploring that, and had been in that world a little bit too, but Trap House helped me conceptualize a lot of the themes of Shy DNA, Chicago Drone Activism Project. And
years ago,
years ago, it's 2017, yeah. Right? So I think help that project grow, help myself grow, help Soapbox grow. So I hold Trap House and Michonne and the community around that, in a very special place in my heart. So I want just to center that and to name that before we even get going. But, welcome, welcome. Cue the DJ horns for Michonne Ali Hendrix. If y'all don't know, Michonne is a Chicago-born and raised organizer, restorative justice practitioner, community architect, and owner of the restorative justice-based streetwear brand and boutique Trap House Chicago, which houses the Feed the 79th Initiative, Peace Circles, art installations, and much, much more. Michonne Ali Hendrix, what's good?
What's going on, brothers? How you gentlemen doing, man?
Oh, you know, we vibing.
We're just finally glad we finally got. I'm just glad we finally got some time with you, man. You're out here, you busy, huh?
You know, I'm grateful to be here. I won't say that I'm busy. I would say that you know, I'm just doing what I've said I need to do. I'm just doing what I need to do. I say it like that, and I mean, busy don't mean accomplishments. You know, so doing what I need to do. I say it like that, man. You know, I'm just happy and grateful that we finally got here as well. And man, I'm ready to record something that I can't wait to listen to.
Hey, there we go.
I think there's a couple ways we can go into this conversation, but I really think it would be very helpful for folks to understand a little bit of your relationship, a little bit of your background with restorative justice, and how that kind of taken place and cemented itself in your life. And then everyone else, like how that happened to the rest, right? Like to us.
So I think I was 19, 20. I was at Columbia College, Chicago. And
shout out.
Come on. And, two of my cousins were just, you know, shot. One passed away, and the family was a little toe up. And at that time, I was just getting introduced to streetwear. You know, this boutique called Self-Conscious. It ain't around no more. It's now Success. And the brands that I was shopping with at the time were Black owned, and it was like my introduction to like Black entrepreneurship, like that was influential. So I wanted to start a brand to really express like my desire for like Black unity, you know, And yeah, I'm leaving Columbia. I'm going to get me something to eat. I hit the little subway and I see the first black man that I've ever seen outside of a church or a car salesman with a suit on. And I walk up to him like, man, what do you do? And we talk for about 2.5 hours. I told him about my idea for a streetwear brand, to, you know, fund mentoring programs. And he just so happened to be like a deputy staff member for a very large non-for-profit organization. And he was like, man, I want to show you something. And me, him, one of my homies, we went right across the street, 55 East Jackson, and in a high-rise building. It was my first time in a high-rise. And he took me to this place, Chicago Area Project, and introduced me to every staff member and gave me an opportunity to volunteer. And I came the next day. And the following day, I came. And then the following day, I came. And then the following day. So I will work UPS at night, go to Columbia during the day. And when I wasn't at school, I was at this place volunteering. And I volunteered there for years. It turned into a job, which turned me. It had a major influence on the man that I am, the person that I am today. I volunteered there to be a peer mentor, because the people I was working with, quote unquote, working with, weren't too much younger than me. And some was like my exact age, you know? And the thing was, is during the week, they would be sending me to trainings. Read this book, read this article. What you think about this, you know? And it was like master level, PhD level content. And one of those trainings was the Peace Circle Keeper training. And what I will say too, you know, a lot of those trainings that they would send me to, not only would I be like the youngest person in the room, but I'd be the only black male in the room. And oftentimes I was like seeing like young people go through these experiences, which lead to these behaviors. And here's risk factors, and here's how you can prevent and address. And I was looking at the list of things that quote unquote young people go through. Like, yeah, I've been through that. I've been through that. I've been through that.
Check.
Like,
check.
Hey, it's me.
Check. Come on. Then I'm also looking at the behaviors, and I'm like, damn, I do that. I do that. I do that. You know, and then the scientific like remedies, you know, like the proven best practices for what people can do. The practitioners was getting that information to go out and like diagnose or quote unquote, just to treat. I won't say to heal, but to treat. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I can do this myself. So a lot of this information that was placed in front of me through these trainings to make me more effective at my volunteer position and eventually employee position was actually healing for me. You know, so we had a contract with the Department of Human Services to do financial literacy trainings with teen mothers, and wasn't much going on in that class. Just a lot of, you know, conflicts, you know, people weren't really engaged. And my boss's boss, older woman, she said that she's going to come out and, you know, see what she can do. Because I was thinking that my ability to be relatable and reflect the culture, because I was a part of it, is what made me a good teacher. That's what I was basing quote unquote success on, you know. And she came out and was like, man, set the room, put the chairs in a circle, remove the tables, cut the light off. She lit a candle, burned some incense. I'm like, what is about to go down?
It's a seance? What's going on?
Come on. You know, and 2 hours later, like my mind was completely open to, I just had an experience that I didn't know was possible. You know, one of those things that you don't know, you don't know. And those same sisters, them same, you know, young women, you know, laughed together, cried together, shared their hopes, fears, everything. And from that day on, it was smooth sailing in that classroom, you know, that contract. So I say, man, can you teach me how to do that? Because in my mind, I want to be a better teacher. In my mind, I want to have mind control, quote unquote, mind control. And she sent me to the training. And those 5 days transformed my life. And I just fast forwarded too, from 20 to 24. I got trained when I was 24. And at that time in my life, I had rims on my car, sounds in my car. You know, my car was like a year old. I was out here with typical perspective, cars, clothes, girls, work a job, go to club on a week, go to the club on a weekend. Just, you know, I wasn't living in alignment with values that I've chosen, values that I've extracted from myself. That 5 day peace circle keeper training, it really gave me the opportunity to really hear my thoughts, see information that was in my brain that I didn't put there. It introduced me to like the steering wheel of life. Like and I'm still processing to this day the things that those 5 days did for me. Because the 5 days was like, there's the North Star. The skill set that I got from the training is what allowed me to take steps on that journey. You know, so from that day, you know, not too long after that, our funding got cut. You know, Rob Blagojevich ended up going to jail, you know. maybe cut this out or not, you know, but
I mean, we
it's history at this point.
Yeah, it's history.
You can Google this. I mean,
yeah, you know,
and then got pardoned, right, or whatever.
Like, whatever. Yeah, recently, not too long ago. I got an opportunity to. I was asked to come help keep a circle keeper training for an entire staff at an alternative school, and that went great. It went amazing. 2 weeks later, that same alternative school asked me to come in and keep some peace circles. I didn't know that they was scouting me to become a substitute teacher. And I came thinking that I was going to keep one peace circle. And I was, you know, 24 at the time. Students at this school were 17 to 22. And I kept the first peace circle. And the process was effective. I ain't going to be like, I rocked it. Because that's not how I move. But the process, it was impactful for those humans, the teachers and the students. So they said, man, ask them to do another one. So I stayed the next period. The process was impactful for those students in that class. And I ended up keeping four circles that day, back to back to back to back. And at the end of the day, they asked me, would I be willing to start Monday as a substitute teacher? And I thank you for letting me share this story like this, because it's truly a divine story, you know? And I don't have no background in education. I don't have a degree in education. And what I said yes, I came Monday, and all I was relying on was the peace circles. Build these relationships, get acquainted with these students, establish values before I think I'm about to do anything. All right. And, you know, and this, I came into a classroom that was unified, just unified against the teacher. They got the previous teacher to quit. And yeah, you know, and 4 weeks, 3 weeks later, after sitting in peace circles, every class period from 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock, with different students, some classes with the same students. Not only was I a transformed individual because I carried the stories of every person that I sat in circle with, I had a piece of their perspective. I was considerate, willing to cooperate, compassionate. I was able to be myself, with each person that I sat in circle with, it transformed the hallway that my classroom was in. And it really laid the foundation for us to love on each other, to respect each other, to trust each other, and learn from each other, to the point where when students would have conflicts in other classrooms, they'll want to come to my classroom to resolve it. Mm. You know, and that led other teachers to being curious about, you know, what exactly, how is he keeping these circles with these students? And, you know, not too long after that, a contract was, I got another job on the North Side where I can teach more educators about how to build a restorative approach to classroom management, how to reduce the number of suspensions, expulsions, and in-school arrests, specifically for students of color. Way up north, way west, Bogan, over east, and in Inglewood. It was four different schools. It was called the Safe Schools Consortium. I think it was funded by I think Michelle Obama and a few other people. This is when restorative justice was fairly new to CPS, and we significantly reduced the number of suspensions, expulsions, and in-school arrests in those four schools in an authentic way, not making schools unsafe because we're sweeping behavior and suspensions under the rug, but truly able to transform perspectives and practices because we've built value-based relationships school-wide, like authentically transforming the way people perceive and practice, whether it's teaching or learning. And I'm not romanticizing it or saucing it or gassing it one bit. Okay. That was that. And then I was independently contracted by CPS after leaving that place of employment. And I was just doing citywide professional developments. I think I was like 26 or 27 at the time. And that was a very humbling experience, teaching people that's my peers and up to like 2.5 times my age, and really being a vessel, a tool of this process that reminds people to have grace, that reminds people to have not just grace with others, but with themselves.
Mm.
You know, that reminds people that regardless of our gender, our sexuality, our race, our body type, our body smell, like that we share the same sun and moon. It might sound over tree huggerish, and oftentimes people move in a way in which it's that like they forgot it. We forget that, you know. So after that, though, I took another job at the YMCA. It's interesting because I never really applied for these jobs. I would get an email and somebody,
flex.
It's just being real.
No, I'm just playing.
I used to joke around and say I went straight to the league, just like LeBron, you know, like, cause we've been same time. But I wasn't applying for these jobs. I would get an email with a job description and say, your name came up. You came highly recommended. Are you interested? And for me, I've always believed in restorative justice, the process, to the point where I would be willing to try it. Mm-hmm. And the YMCA was to work with Chicago Police Department in 6 different districts to the CAPS Department, the Community Alternative Policing Strategy, which is like the officer friendlies and not the beat officers, which I didn't know that at the time, but to train police officers to be circle keepers and to create restorative policing strategies. When I first read it, I'm like, you know, get out of here with that nonsense. And then I felt convicted to like, well, don't let my own bias and perspective prevent this process. So be curious and be a vessel for the process and see what happens. So I did it. And again, I would say there was, I think it was all, no, it wasn't all women. And not to say that women don't have unhealthy practices as law enforcement, but it was like literally like our aunties and like our sisters. You know, it was the ones that if they took the uniform off, they don't have a stench of, they don't have that stench of arrogance. You know, like these weren't the officers that really needed, that really would have benefited, that really would have had their approach broken. You know, so it wasn't any of that, you know, that process, that that time frame that I had that contract, it did a lot for me. And it didn't do, it was like a spit in the ocean as far as impacting CPD. And then lastly, after that, another opportunity, but, you know, I quit the contract with the YMCA working with CPD. And I started, that's when I started Trap House Chicago. That's when that idea of crime pays, which I'm just looking at it. And, you know, I've sharpened my skill set because I'm telling you my system involvement, you know, work. And I sharpened that skill set from keeping circles at churches, in garages, at non-for-profit organizations outside, at home, backyards, basketball courts. Like I was keeping barbershops, art galleries, museums. Like I was keeping circles. I was using circles as means of a quality nightlife experience, you know, when I was off work, you know. So so about a year and a half into Trap House Chicago, I got another email and somebody pulled up on me to recruit me to pique my interest in the restorative justice community court. And I took that contract and that was a all right year. But what I found is that a lot of people in the system want to dilute the approach more than transform it. And by diluting it, I mean, they just want to, you know, they want to make impact. I ain't with that. You know, it's that 10-year plan. I get it, and it's not how I think. You know, that's not how I think. And I believe in radical restorative justice. When I do my workshops and trainings, I tell people that I don't even use the word restorative justice, you know, because that's colonizer language, you know, and that's, the punitive approach is new. Restorative justice is not new.
Let's go!
That's how we have always maintained community. You know, so this term of restorative justice, you know, I see it as relationship and wholeness. You know, so, you know, there's this one set of words that is commonly used to give an idea of this philosophy in action, AKA a definition, but I don't like to speak so definitely or definitively. It says to the extent possible, right? It says restorative justice is a set of practices and values that involve, comma, like to the extent possible, like that involves everyone involved in a harm. And it keeps, I want to keep saying to the extent possible, that to the extent possible is a variable based upon the practitioner. And there's a lot of people who have not been across the bridge of incidents from the punitive world to this restorative justice island. So they're not over there. They haven't done the work to fully be a vessel for this process, to even understand it, like to practice it, because people can articulate it with those sets of words. And when it comes down to practicing, what's your patient stamina like? What's your listening stamina like? What's your compassion stamina like? How authentic and vulnerable are you showing up to do the work that requires other people to be authentic and vulnerable? How are you going to ask others to do something, to be a particular, to show up in a particular energy when you aren't modeling that? And from my experience, and I only speak from my experience, I love saying, I don't know. All right, I only speak from my experience that I got the receipts for. That's the real work. Relationship with yourself, being on the journey of wholeness, so that if and when there's issues in a community that you're a part of, you're the one that's who knows their strength in being vulnerable, and you can model it. You're the one who can listen longer. You know, so yep, I quit the Y abruptly, started Trap House Chicago, because I've always felt like the people closest to the opportunities are the ones closest to the solutions. I used to say people closest to the issues are the ones closest to the solutions, and me fully transforming my perspective. Yes, issues are accurate, but also they're opportunities.
Thank you for all of that. I mean, I knew a little bit of it, not most of it, and I appreciate hearing that journey. My ear got caught to so many things. I want Dave and I to share as well and try to conceptualize stuff from our vantage point experiences too, and not just ask you things. But I'm thinking about so much. I think two of the things that stick out a lot to me are, for one, and we'll get in the Trap House for folks who don't know about it, and whenever we do, but that the spark to all of this, right? Going to that first that nonprofit meeting, meet all the people and stuff from the man in the street, was you talked to him, or what sounded like you spoke to him because of what he was wearing, right? His garb, his presence, his, you know, that's why you talked to him in the first place, right? So I see and I hear and I feel like why streetwear and appearance and presenting, you know, your values is important to you, and I think to all of us in this conversation, right? So I heard that initially too. I was like, oh, like that's this whole journey started that we're all a part of now, started because of, you know, reaching out to someone for what they were wearing. Second thing was that near the end with the reshaping of the language, how we conceptualize all of this in the world and we're in, sort of justice is, you know, we've been living those values for generations, for centuries, right? This comes from African and indigenous traditions, right? It's nothing new. But as most things, it's, you know, now it's a term, it's coined, it's grown in popularity in institutions like you've mentioned and outside, which I think we feel two ways about. It's good, right, that it's more popular, that folks are learning who otherwise wouldn't. But it's always that kind of like, now it's like the same institutions, the same, you know, the state, in my view, that that has no interest and operates antithetically to liberation and healing is now co-opting the same thing. I feel like there's a paradox there that we have to be very, very keen about. But all that to say, I love that you mentioned that, quote unquote, restorative justice, healing harm within communities, that predates all of this, predates us by generations. So we're just getting, we're getting back to what we used to do, right? It's the punitive system, it's the PIC, prison industrial complex, all these things we always talk about and critique. That's the new shit. Police are new. You know, ICE is new. DHS is new. This is all new shit that we know doesn't work, right? We're just getting back to the old shit that we know works. So I really appreciate you centering that and putting that in the forefront before we even dig into the nitty gritty. So I just wanted to say ashe to that. Mm-hmm. David, I know you were listening intently. Do you have takeaways or things you want to bring about or to center before we kind of get into the weeds of some of the nuances there?
Not having moments like this, Mashan, with you specifically, but I think, you know, is to be expected, and I just appreciate, and I just want to call out, you know, your transparency, your willingness to communicate, right? And it's interesting you're talking about, like, you know, to be able to really put what we're referring to as restorative justice into practice, it's a self check method the entire time, right? It's like, how patient truly are you, right? And so I see it, I hear it, and I appreciate you for being that, right, an example of how this works and how you manifest this, right? Because this also isn't simple, right? There's so many things that go into the way in which restorative justice, and we'll just keep naming it that, is challenged, right? And like, you know, the I don't know, just fugazi bullshit about it, right? In ways people are trying to discredit, right? What we actually know works, right? And what we actually know, you know, is the solution to the things that we're waking up to this morning. You know what I'm saying? But no, just that's all I wanted to center in that.
And what you're saying? You know, so when people say that restorative justice doesn't work, their perspective is valid. It's how they were introduced to it. Years ago, when practitioners Sheryl Graves, Ora Shrewell, you know, rest in peace, you know, Robert Spicer, Pamela Purdy, you know, Michelle Day, when these people, myself included, when we were sitting down with CPS, modeling peace circles, showing them the paradigm shift, you know, prescribing the remedy for the suspensions, expulsions, and in-school arrest, the harm. CPS turned and then said, here's what we need to do. We need to get teachers circle trained. CPS was saying that, and it's I guess it's true, and it's a decision that they didn't have the capacity to. Financial money, they didn't have the money or the time. So what they said was, y'all gonna have 1 hour, and that hour is gonna be 1 day a week, 2 days a week, teachers prep periods or their lunch. And maybe we'll give you 1 hour after school, maybe an hour before school. And it was really left up to the discretion of the principal. So it was never a district-wide reconstruction that forced capacity. You know, and like how would one have done that? And I always think that it's possible. So they got a watered down understanding. They got a watered down workshop and training. And again, the behaviors that was being brought to the classroom over these last 10 years, this drill decade, that requires master level patience. Now, when I'm talking about master education, fuck the education. Right. I'm talking about master, like black belt practice patience. That's what I mean when I say master level. I'm talking about you, and I don't want to be confusing. Excuse me for cursing. I'm trying to stop cursing. It requires a high level patience, patient stamina, compassion stamina, curiosity. And, you know, so it requires literally a brain swap, an understanding swap, a paradigm shift. And teachers wasn't getting that. They was getting the information saying, talk gently, remove student from the classroom, ask these three restorative questions. We're going to have a restorative conversation. And the students was like, man, get out my face with that BS. Okay. Now, there were some schools that said, hey, we're going to really invest time and energy in this, Mr. Hendricks. There were schools that said, yo, we're really going to invest time and effort in this, you know, CJYI or alternatives. And these organizations and independent contractors, we will come in and do the work. And what's going to happen? We'll shift the whole culture. Shift the culture. Shift the culture. Okay? So a good 70%, and I'm pulling this percentage just, you know, I'm pulling it out of the air based upon my experience. Okay? There were more schools that didn't get the quality, straight cut restorative justice. There were, It was more schools that got their watered down joint, right, which made schools unsafe because here was the demand. And CPS would say this, that the policy was transformed. A restorative response became student code of conduct from a level one to a level five. The school had the option to resolve it restoratively, or you can go about it punitive. And that's why I say to the extent possible. All right. And then CPS put the demand on schools, man, cut them suspension, right? I don't care what you do, cut them. And then again, that's when there was no accountability. Students punching teachers, but I'm not going to go that far. But students doing level three, fours, and fives and still coming to school the next day. Because they just, well, we're not going to suspend them. Screw it. All right. So when people say that it don't work, they're not lying based upon their experience because they never had the straight drop. Yeah. And by straight drop, I mean the real.
Uncut. Yeah. They never had the real. They never had the holistic actual experience of it. And I have lots of thoughts, but I want to just in, for sake of someone listening who has heard of Safe School for Justice, has heard us talk broad strokes on like how it's repealing harm, in those ways. Can you, if I had no idea what we're talking about or what a peace circle was specifically, can you talk a little bit to like what a peace circle is on the face of it or how you've experienced it just for someone, just to have something to hold on to for folks who aren't familiar with what we're talking about and we can kind of go from there a little bit.
All right, cool. So the quickest way I can help somebody understand what restorative justice is talk about its counterpart, which is the punitive approach, right? A punitive approach to being in culture. And culture, I mean, a shared space, punitive approach to being in community, whether it's a classroom, a workspace, or a home, a church, wherever. All right. It's, and when there's an issue, the punitive minded people think this, what rule was broken, who broke the rule, and what punishment is deserved. These people believe that punishment and fear of future punishment is going to do that. That's the people at the top making the rules, people at the bottom. If you do not obey the rules, you're violating the rules and the authority. The opposite of that is a relationship-based approach to being in community. Again, whether it's a classroom, a church, a school, a home, a marriage, or whatever, a workplace, all right? And that requires relationships to be built, okay? There's five steps, getting acquainted, building a relationship, establishing values, and then that fourth and fifth can be anything, teaching a classroom, running a business, operating a podcast, okay? The fifth one is the taking action piece, if and when there's an issue. All right, because I say if there's an issue, because we can build relationships so deep that transforms how we perceive behavior. All right, because if we don't do one, two, and three to get acquainted, build a relationship, establish values that we are agreed upon to guide our actions and interactions. If we don't do that, we are primed for an issue. All right. And a lot of people say restorative justice. When there's an issue, we resolve it restoratively. No, we build the relationship. Because you can't restore a relationship. We said this earlier, bro. It's a couple years ago, 2019. You can't restore a relationship that doesn't exist.
It wasn't there. Right.
All right. So knowing that these are a deeper type of relationship, we use the restorative practice of peace circles, which goes by that same five steps. All right, so peace circles are a structured dialogue that ensure that all voices get heard, that every person there has an opportunity to speak or not speak. It's not based on hierarchy. You can't tell who's the keeper when someone is holding space in alignment with the process. All right, it is a ancient, sacred way of communicating, being in community, holding people accountable, building a skill, building relationships. It's all about wholeness, safety, and healing. So I believe that peace circles are a radical act. If there was a protest that I was organizing, I'd tell everybody to pull up with a chair. Bring two, as a matter of fact. And we're going to block off Lakeshore Drive, just like them powerful people did a few years back, right? Just like those powerful people have been doing for the last forever. But sit down, and we're going to sit in circle. Bring them barbecue grills, too. We're going to be barbecuing, and we're going to sit in circle. And we're going to build a relationship. And let's tell them people that are standing over there getting paid from all their tax dollars, man, come sit down. Because the only solution, in my opinion, is to build and strengthen relationships. The more you know about someone, the harder it becomes to harm them, you know? And I don't like to speak like this when I don't, you know, I've seen a lot of people, relationships, and perspectives transformed sitting in a circle. So I believe that I have a, I don't think my perspective is unique. It's just not a lot of people around me who has the same experiences. And sometimes it makes me, I just don't like conflict, man. Keeping it a buck. Because I want there to be relationships. And I don't want to be argumentative. A lot of people are so ready to disagree. People listen for what they listen to identify what they disagree with.
Right.
And more come than back. Listening to hear something that they don't disagree with to question themselves. You know? So yeah, I think it's easy to be racist when you don't have relationships with the other. You know, and that's why I say I believe it's a radical act. You know, and then again, I'm so far from a punitive mindset. Sometimes I wish I can think punitively, but I haven't in years.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I'm listening, bro.
It's yeah, man. My mind's going everywhere.
I was like, Mama, you've been punitive my whole life. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I feel so much that, and I think, you know, we've all been spaces, at least Dave and I too, I guess growing up and stuff, and just now it's like, well, I've my politics, my mindset, my worldview has been much more insular and community driven and self-reflective the past couple years, right? I think I'm starting to get away from how the punitive mindset and the hierarchical mindset has affected how I move in the world. Because I can speak all day about the macro level shit and how it's fucked up and how it affects our society. And I hold those near and dear and carry them out in my own personal life, but not as much now than I ever have before, in a good way, right? And when thinking about what you just said and referencing, like, you know, protest and I think of movement politics and how protests operate in a good way, right? And how that looks. I think about in the summertime, you know, folks took over Columbus, or what was formerly Columbus statue. That shit's gone now. But shout out Miracle Boyd, Good Kids, Mad City. She was punched in the face by a CBD officer, right? When they had a press conference, she spoke at it, and she was pretty much like,
I am calling for an officer who attacked me to be relieved of his duties, and I have a peace check with me to repair the harm he has caused. This will show the power of restorative justice and how we can make our community safer without police.
And, you know, for me, I'm just like, wow. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. And, like, I know that's, I believe that, but I'm like, woo, I'd be hot. I'd be real hot. But seeing that on such a specific level and for what that, I don't want to say metaphorically, I don't want to, you know, act like that what happened didn't happen, but seeing a young black woman get punched by an operative of the state during a protest that is defending a statue of a genocidal maniac and tear gassing its own people, right? Like, that's the backdrop of all this happening. Strip all that away, she's saying, yo, have him come to the table, let's have a peace circle about this. Like, that's as beautiful to me, right?
Strong.
Right? I'm saying.
Too strong. Like, I can't. But that's the thing, that's, and I definitely hear you, Colin. I don't want to interrupt you, but I just want to kind of like bounce off of that, because it's truly that, right? And I think being able to understand anything, right, is one thing, but then being able to implement is definitely another, right? But I do think, Mashan, to your point, I think a big part of it is the relationships that we build, right? And who in our lives have and been having that punitive mindset, and who in these spaces are showing us the contrary, right? Or are manifesting or working too, right? Because we also have to be aware And just like as when, you know, we're talking about people and, you know, abolitions, like you gotta see where they're at, right? And you have to be patient in that same mindset. That's kind of how I see you with the rest of the world, right? me and Colin out here want to, like, you know, throw hands, and you're just like, no, you don't have to. Like, you're like, why are you mad right now? You know, it's in versus, you know, and so it's so, I don't know, yeah, miracle. And it never happened, though, right? Let's also be honest. Like, even though this was something that was asked, it never happened, right? Because they probably don't, I don't know.
Well, do I'm thinking about, works? I mean, I'm just curious. I mentioned this earlier, too, just about, like, you know, I think I knew this. I forgot that, Mashawn, you had worked with either Caps or just worked, I knew you were had worked in alternative high schools or alternative schools before, but thinking about CPS, you know, wanting to do sort of justice, kind of, not having the funds and resources, like the fact that this school that say, and this is probably not the case, say they were super genuine about it, but didn't have the resources to put it in place. Like, I know it's probably not the case, but like, just say it was. CPS doesn't, you know, never has the funds or ability to do all the things that they wanted to, right? Or it seems like that's the case. And so on a, you zoom out, 2020, you know, CPD police department gets $1.8 billion with the B a year, $4.9 million a day. That's not the same with CPS, right? And so we zoom out, and you're gonna see that, in my view, the state and the hierarchy that exists as far as to govern us, if you want to go that far, doesn't have those values in place. And it's my view that you police department and the prison industrial complex, as you said earlier, is directly antithetical to our sort of approach, because it doesn't, the foundation of it isn't relationships. The foundation of it isn't healing or understanding how harm happens or getting to the root cause of anything. It's literally the opposite. And so the fact that this same system that has cops in schools, has schools themselves, apart from what we consider the PIC, having a school to prison pipeline, or just operating in a hierarchical model as far as having a teacher talking to class does what the teacher says without any kind of relationship being needed in the first place to teach or to educate and not be on the same playing field. I mean, like, take all things we know to be harmful out in the first place. Look at the structure of a school, the structure of really kind of any kind of bigger institution, the hierarchy of it. It's built, it's predicated on pyramid. It's predicated on someone being above someone else and having power and having what you're hanging over their head is being fired. If it's a principal and it's people under them, assistant principals, teachers, whatever. So I think, you know, I think we're thinking more deeply about just how our institutions we say we like teachers and schools and all that, like, that also needs to be deconstructed. So I don't think that's a surprise that the state's not going to give school system funding in order to put in this practice that we have seen work. Again, that's assuming a lot, that even that they even want in the first place, right? That's assuming a lot. So I'm hearing that, I'm not surprised, right? But also, where I see movement come in is that, you know, that was several years ago, 2019, CTU had massive strikes, had a wildcat strike, right? That was not necessarily in their contract, to strike for social justice, implemented resources, counselors, librarians, sort of justice practitioners in the schools. And they, you know, it wasn't the contract they wanted, they voted us for, but they got some stuff out of that, right? And one of those things were having some schools that suffered the most being able to have, and this is kind of messed up that it was one of the three, but a librarian or sort of justice practitioner or a counselor in the school, but it's something, right? And a lot of those schools chose RJ practitioners, and we've already seen that that be effective, if you want to use that kind of like scientific terminology for it, which I think is also kind of an issue. But we've seen that work in certain ways. And so it's interesting seeing not only what you talked about in your experience coming to this point, but also just let's take CTU in general. We look at protests back or strikes back in the day of CTU. We look at strikes from 2015, 2013, and those were not popular. Those were not, you know, not everyone got on board. In 2019, it was a party. Everyone's posting, no, the teacher is gay, the teacher, CTU, teacher.
Facebook profile. I stand it's with my Facebook teacher. Facebook profile.
He's like, where were y'all 3 years ago?
Like, fuck.
Where were y'all a couple years ago? So it's popping in 2019, right? And we get some wins out of that, right? We're seeing that with, I think, restorative justice in a way. And like I mentioned earlier, we we want to celebrate that. We want to uplift that, as far as this is, more people are knowing this term, at least, nothing else. They may know the practice a little bit more, but we gotta pump the brakes a little bit too, as far as how it's getting colonized or recolonized, and how do we push back on that, but embrace the good things coming from it. You know, they've heard this, me say this in this podcast before, but same thing with this George Floyd movement, right? Folks are on board with BLM. Folks are looking at policing as institution and understanding that they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do. They're understanding the harm that's endemic to the institution. But as corporations start saying, BLM, we stand with you, we're like, all right, it's cool that it's out in the ether like that, but now we got to check how that's actually come to fruition, how they're actually putting that into practice. So I think talking about RJ and even transformative justice, if you want to go that far too, in this moment is super interesting, because so much has happened in the past year and in the past decade with a lot of different quote unquote issues, different happenings that I think is for the better, but also we gotta check where that comes from and check why it's getting popular and check who's funding that. And you know, we look at the 2010s, you mentioned the drill decade, right? And folks, you know, really need, so RJ and we see institutions in the state really invest in certain things we don't like and divest from other things. And so it's not a coincidence that drill rap in Chicago becomes popular, because of the conditions and anti-blackness and the poverty that is intentionally institutionalized and has been for the past 40, 50, 60 years through new neoliberalism, but for duration before that. But I'm talking about specifically post-World War II, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's no surprise. But folks like you, folks who are doing the work, and communities who are embracing the work, because we know this isn't about individuals, it's about the community, right? That's the whole point. We're seeing that change, and I love it. And I love seeing it be put in the ether with culture, with what I hope we're doing with Soapbox and this podcast and films and all that, but also with the streetwear, with Trap House, which makes me feel really good. And it's awesome to see y'all grow and your community grow at the same time as we see these changes happening in our world, really, because it's a global thing, not just in Chicago, though Chicago feels like the world sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it needs to be a cultural movement. You know, I hope and pray my perspective isn't so different, and I just be in my own world. I only go places that, yeah, I'm in my own world, you know. So some years ago, I got free. I mean, like free, like TurboTax, free, you know, and that came as a result of me forgiving, you know, and it was saying like, forgive all, including TBTB, no, TPTB. And I looked that up, and that was like the powers that be, you know? Mm. And when I sat with that thought, that included white people, white structures, history. And I got history books, bro. I'm talking about 1450 history books, Christian hymns. You know, I got books with slaves advocating for being enslaved. You know, like I got books, you know. And I grew up under a, you know, Christian and Islam household. So I would hear about these attributes of Satan. And then I would hear about, you know, the perspective of Islam, one perspective of Islam, you know, that is truthful. And it loves its own so much that its perspective can be seen as hateful with how cut, direct, you know. So hearing the attributes of Satan and hearing about history, it gave me a very deep perspective which made it very hard to even think about forgiving. And I sat with it for about 6-7 months, you know, meditating, affirmations. I said, let's just try it. What's on a, if it's this hard for me, it gotta be a, it gotta be something on the other side. So let's make the affirmations. I forgive white people. I forgive America. I forgive. And I just start writing them out, you know, cause I felt I could only do that after I was able to forgive my father, forgive my mother, you know, for things that I was blaming them on. You know, I was stuck below the line in victim mode. Things happened to me, or I was villainizing my parents, telling how bad they were, you know, or I'm, you know, so after about a year of forgiving my family, I realized that all I really wanted was to be with my family. And I'm grateful that I was able to do that before they made their transition. They're both still alive now. So knowing what was on the other end of forgiving my parents, it made me curious of what's on the other end of forgiving white people, the system, history, current state, current situations. And it took me about 6 months, man, about 6-7 months. And I hit this affirmation that like nothing, no thing has any power over me. And my power is based upon my ability to keep my perspectives intact in the face of any circumstance. And I'm not less than anything, than anyone. I'm a whole being. Even if you don't hold the door for me, even if you don't say good morning back to me, even if I'm quote unquote racially profiled, it makes me no less of nothing in my own perspective, which means that when we engage, I don't engage with others from a victim standpoint, from a you have power over me standpoint, that you have anything like that you hold any of my power. I maintain my power. And when I did that, y'all, you talking about, because it's one thing to get that in your mind, and it's another thing to get it in your actions, and it's stuck, and it becomes your foundation for knowing. Well, I'm walking around downtown Chicago, man, walking out of these stores and stuff, and white people letting the door close on me. Or I say good morning, and they don't say nothing back, or cops, just different stuff. And my perspective, well, it took me about another additional 2 months to really get it. Because I was, you know, primary cause of suffering is forgetfulness and wrong thinking. And I had to remember and not think wrong about myself. Remember who I am and never think anything outside of that. Again, in the face of all circumstances. Once I was able to put this in practice consistently, boy, it transformed my perspective of white people and all people and the experiences that I would have. It was, man, the system, white people, all people, and this is the same, I keep saying white folks because people that I would be blaming in my mind, love me so much that they created an obstacle to ensure that I'm strong. They love me so much that they and take their time and energy to create an opportunity for me to never forget who I am. And I know that that's a far the fuck out ass perspective.
I'm trying to get there. I'm trying.
Okay. And I only share this, man, because I'm nervous even saying it because it might sound like bullshit to some people. Mm. All right. And that's one direction. You know, moving around all these different neighborhoods on the south and west side. Boy, I thought I was about to get robbed a couple times. And my foundation of who I am was solid. So I can turn around and my energy don't shift. But I'm walking from, I'm on a bus, man. I'm leaving from Concept Store 1, walking to 79th Street. Late at night on Ashland, a couple of the guys run up on me. And I turn around and I'm like, nigga, I'm just as broke as you. And we just laugh. I'm like, man, y'all be safe, man. You know, my energy was there. You know, and I ain't gonna lie, man, part of me wanna be like, cut all that, you know. And I say that to say I don't think that I'm the only person there. And imagine 100,000 black folks whose power is not held up in an other, something outside. Because the system that currently exists, boy, they created that shit to best serve them. They created it to best serve them. They use their tools, which is manipulation and force and violence and hate and their imagination. Ain't no part of me that don't think that the people with love in their heart, regardless of your skin tone, and if we make this about race, I think no part of me that don't think Pac offset. Ain't no part of me that don't think that nobody, if you can think, I believe you got the ability to put it through your feet. It's just about collective and keeping our power. And I really feel like I just took it so far. All right. And that is where I'm at right now. I ain't get there overnight. That's 14 years. All right. That's 14 years.
I mean, I did tell you we're going to go as far as we can go. So, man, just, but that's truth though, right? I think that there's just so much there. And oftentimes, you know, it was interesting because I was going to ask you, Mashan, bro, as this dude who clearly thinks in punitive forms, what is one ways that I can get out of it? And I think you very much answered that, right? It's understanding, you know, what is around us, closest to us, and how, you know, those harms that we still deal with, you know? Okay. And forgiven, right? That's a start. So thank you for that.
What you doing right now, man? I was doing that for 6 years, G. What you doing in this moment? 6 years. 6 years. The first four was pain. The last two was gratitude, because as I was affirming forgiveness, everything that was so deep inside of me that I was just tucking away, that was making me who I am, my character, what my character was built on, I had to deal with it. Never getting certain things that I begged for as a kid, seeing other kids get it, I didn't have it. Not being able to go different places, not being able to do certain things, not been, you know, arguments, shelters, you know, so much stuff. The trauma that I didn't realize that I processed, that I found out from going through all these classes, you know, and like, because my parents ain't changed. My family has not changed. They the same people. They the same people. But Ali ain't. You know what I'm saying? So when I get the same messages and the same phone, when I get talked to the same way, I know how to, one, remove myself if I decide to. And two, I know how to hear the love in it. Have grace for them. Ask questions that make them say, why are you asking that? And I say, because I'm curious. And then I have a conversation with my mom or my dad or my brother or my sister that's 3 hours long, and it's just them talking. You know, so because I say restorative justice, that's whack. I say relationship wholeness, because it's really an collective individuals, collective whole individuals. The peace circle ain't nothing but people witnessing other people witness themselves. Because it ain't a space for advice. It ain't a space for nothing other than vulnerability and people saying what they need to hear themselves say, getting it out, and other people witnessing it, being witnessed. That's it. That's it. You know, and my secret sauce as it relates to when people ask me to come resolve a conflict, we would build relationships. We would never get to the conflict. Because that's for them to deal with after the circle. Because we've built enough relationship to make the person valuable to them, to make the relationship valuable to make time, to make the relationship the most pressing thing to deal with in this moment. I gave y'all, like, you are, not I, the process extracted enough truth.
Mm.
The truth is the values. And you're not going to go nowhere because I heard you say it. I know what's in you now. I know you care. I know you care. It was this boy. He was flaming his girl. I'm talking about flaming her. You know, her clothes and shoes and stuff.
No.
And he was, you know, a fresh guy. She wasn't that fresh. And in the circle, you talk about a relationship built. You talking about a relationship built to the point where, and it was three circles. It wasn't just one. Three circles over the course of a week and a half. When they got back to the classroom, what they learned about each other, the relationship that they built, wasn't nobody about to talk about that girl. Wasn't nobody. You know, and one more thing I say, man, this system is restorative. America is restorative already. It's already restorative. The business world is restorative. It's just relationship and whole for the people that are a part of it and sustain it. It ain't got to be for us. This is how they built it. It's the system. You know what I'm saying? The education system creates a certain level of patriot. So at different schools for different people. You know, and the X Games in the 80s, skateboarders used to be, you know what I'm saying? Like the outward bounds of the outer bounds of the elastic circular community. Now the X Games, what, like that? That's a whole kajillion, you know what I'm saying? It's like a billion, you know? Like,
I want to be Tony Hawk.
Come on. You know, so like they, you know, like this, Kanye even said like branding gets less time than, you know, so like they are restorative with their own because they can be. It's theirs. Okay. And I don't think that they built it. I don't think they built it for everybody. And that's what it is. And I know this might sound crazy. This is a whole other type of conversation, what I'm saying. I just believe in we got the collective ability to build businesses, restorative-based businesses, relationship-responsible businesses to the point where we can compete in a loving way until there is no more to compete with. Like, we just got to shift the scale back towards love because we protest socially, politically, but not economics. Like, we don't. When everybody that went to DC, they had to buy gas, they had to take an airplane, they had to pay tolls. The system ate well. Keep protesting. Keep riding the metro, the red line, but like keep buying gas, keep paying for parking.
Right.
Until we protest with our money, in my opinion, because we got the political, we got the social. We put our money together. What the fuck? We put our money together. And then we put a pitch deck together that demands people to, you mentioned Trap House. This is, imagine, like, ain't no niggas not buying no more Nikes until they got a Trap House tag on their motherfucker. Because 65% of that shit go right back to the motherfucking community. Same thing with Adidas. Same thing with everybody. Ain't nobody bad. What if we just, man, we, because motherfuckers be riding. Like, it's always about individuals. Rosa Parks, yes, she kicked that shit off by not sitting in the back of the bus. And the transformation came when motherfuckers stopped riding the buses. Rosa Parks alone didn't shift the shit. It was, she kicked it off. Bam, big respect. And when people boycotted, we decided to, nope, we're going to be late to work because we walked. It became an issue that rippled waves to the point where, man, let them black folks rap whatever they want. We just got to get them back on the bus. We need that money. When we, in my opinion, we protest with our dollars, gee, it's over. It's over. And yeah, capitalism is bogus. It's out of alignment with natural law. You know, it's based upon the belief in scarcity and competition. That's true. And what's going to happen if we get rid of it right now? in my opinion, it ain't going to be safe. I believe let's build relationships. And I say, I believe, not I know, because I ain't did it. I'm trying to run up a bag right now with Trap House so we can open more businesses. All right. But I believe some love-based, radical love-based billionaires can really shift the system, G. And I'm talking about in a radical way. Because what else we alive for? It's like, what else we going to do? Being fresh don't feel that cool to me no more. Motherfuckers is dying. Because that's just what it is. This is what happens under this regime.
Because I would argue that there's, you know, and you already mentioned this too, like there's economic boycotts, there's other businesses, I don't say like Trap House, but like like yours have a mission and are about more than just making the dollar work for them.
Bro, we ain't hit $1 million. We don't matter. We ain't hit.
I'm just saying, like, things you said about, like, we don't protest with our dollar. Like, I would argue that we do. We can name examples of that in some capacity. Either investing in places that are doing the work or more than their bottom line, and or divesting from known harmful corporations and such. But I'm thinking about the journey from where we are now to, as you mentioned, capitalism needing inequality, needing violence to exist. It's not only bad in practice, it's bad in theory, in my view. I think on paper it doesn't work. By don't work, I mean it doesn't sustain life for institutions and people. It doesn't have the people's best interest in mind for its life. But also we've seen it not work. But I do hear you on the, if it's, we're not going to Thanos it away and be like, what now? It's got to be a journey to get there. So I think there's, I'm always thinking about, okay, if it's capitalism, patriarchy, anti-blackness, however that's insidiously ingrained in our society, institutions, how we think, all that, we know it, we recognize it, we name it, we slowly start unlearning harmful norms. We start putting this in our practice, in our movements, in our what we move, what we spend our dollar. I think that's all important. For me, it's like, where is the line between using the master's tools to dismantle the master's house to realizing that we ultimately can't do that, have to operate outside and abolish and rebuild. And I think that's will be a long process, but if we know inherently that it's not meant to sustain us, and I mean everybody. We talked earlier about, you know, be around police or white people, whatever. White supremacy hurts white people, right? White supremacy and capitalism are ingrained to hurt everybody, but, you know, rich, cis, straight, white males, right?
And the people that they love, because white supremacy is political, social, and it's money. Like, they did the work for it to be white supremacy. They did the work to do that. That's why they have it. Like, they made the TVs to present a particular concept and idea where people think their livelihood is dependent on them having a motherfucking job. Like, they built that shit. Like, they sat down, thought about that shit, and built that shit. Taught their kids that shit. Taught their kids. Like, that shit raw.
Yeah. And that's why you mentioned earlier, I was thinking about pushing back when you talk about how the system is restorative, the business world is restorative. But I think, in my view, I heard you say that, and I read it as, no, that, like, what they created as this thing that is only for them and works for them is creative, is
they use their imagination. How you use that, right?
I was like, because I think of the business world is predicated on making money over the planet, over people. We see that from slavery back in the day to union busting now to human trafficking. We can name a million corporate horrible things that are happening that we know about. But if the value and the priorities are making money, it's not human lives. And if we see how corporations work with politicians to not only keep their bottom line up, but stay in power, whatever that means for them, and we can see how wars are created because of that, and what manufacturers benefit because of that, and if those are their priorities and those are their values, then yeah, it works exactly how it's supposed to work, and they're doing well for what their values are. And if those are not our values, it doesn't work. And so how do we work for that? So maybe it's a language thing when you said that those worlds are restorative, but I see what you're saying as far as those are values and priorities, they're doing what they're supposed to do. And I think that's when it's a switch in the conversation. I keep going back to policing just because it's in the moment. That's a lot of our work is around, but that's when the what we have known movement-based folks in a lot of capacity, not just like, you know, PIC abolition, but we have known these systems we always talk about, they're working how they're supposed to and doing what they want to do. So I'm always surprised at myself even when I see things happen like this morning, things happen with the 13-year-old in Chicago, and I see things happen with, you know, George Floyd last year. If I get emotional, I'm surprised because I'm like, oh, they're doing, yeah, that's what they're supposed to do. This exists for these things that you are calling aberrations, or why did this happen? How do they do this? Why do they keep doing this? How could they not keep doing this? This is what they're supposed to do. This is what it's formed to do. When they're not doing this, when they're saving cats from trees, that's the weird part. That's the part I'm like, what? They helped that kitty? What? That's the aberration. So all that to say, I appreciate you saying all that and make me think differently yet similarly about how these certain systems and infrastructures we can learn from in a way, right? But also use those tools or use those kind of concepts in order to do something good and to sustain people and lives and love and joy, and not have these requirements on needing certain things in order to literally live. And that foundation is important. I mean, you're happy and have everything you need to survive and live and be joyous, it's easier to have relationships with the world around you. I mean, you don't have that, we see the harm and some of the tragic things we see in our communities, which is where RJ comes in. But I would love to create a world where RJ doesn't need to exist, because we're doing that all the time and we're learning these values all the time. And it's really transformative, and that we don't need certain remedies, as beautiful as they are, to heal, because the harms that do happen are easily to mediate.
Man, that shit exists already. It just ain't for the general population. It exists. Them school districts exist. It's here. It's here. It's like the fourth generation of those kids who've been living it. They just ain't around us, is what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? It's like they did that. It's in the world already. Like, them kids is great, and they kids gonna be great.
Yeah.
They live in restorative, like it's a culture swap. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. they practice indigenous practices now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a culture swap. You know what I'm saying? We are here struggling to survive. You know, some are. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm going to keep it a whole buck with you. You know, I'm learning when to share my thoughts and when to share what I put into action. Because what I've shared with you all today are my thoughts and my journal entries more than what I put into action. I wouldn't dare say this shit on the stage unless I had the time and ability to respond to people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't enjoy being taken for what I said in one moment. Okay. And I have an understanding of what I have experienced, and I know what's in my brain. I know what's fluff and what's not. And I'm also open to learn. And I ain't heard many perspectives that don't put me in a place of, that keeps me in a space of power. I'm not going to be a victim. I'm not about to make anybody else a villain. All right. And I'm sure as hell not about to be nobody's hero. There's this conscious leadership that I've learned, like below the line and above the line, creators, coaches, and challengers. I'm up here. That's what Crime Drought is. That's what Restore Project is. That's what Trap House Chicago is. Like, we created it. So now we're going to challenge people, and then coach the people that accepted the challenge. I'm not about to be a villain. I'm not about to be villainizing white people because I forgave them. Because what I hold holds me, and they ain't touching me. Y'all get the fuck on. Y'all been forgiven already. Get the fuck away from me. Unless you got good energy. I'm not about to be a victim because I'm healed and whole. I've done the work to be healed and whole. And a hero is somebody that's the other people need me. They stressed out trying to be the solution. I'm not that no more. That was what I once was when I first started Trap House. A hero, hero minded. And that was my ego. People need me.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm none of those three down there. I'm not asking nobody to stop doing nothing. I see what you're doing. And I think that pain is necessary. Take your ass to the doctor. Like, what's the next best step when you have pain? You're going to just hope and pray that it go away, but not alter your behavior. You're not going to go do what's necessary to address the pain. Each time somebody is killed by a black person killing a black person, boy, I feel that. I ain't desensitized. When I see that stuff on my Instagram, man, it hurt. Slime season. People shooting. Like, when I see that, it hurt. That hurts me more than when I see a cop killing a black person. Because that's team on team. It's like, man, where your mind at? That ain't your mind. It's not your mind. When I see an other killing one of us, okay. Stay focused, Sean. Keep working. Pray for that family. Send that family energy. How can I support the movement? Do what I got to do to support the movement. You know, and that's why we made that shirt that said build ours. You know, and like, I agree, boy, dismantle this shit, abolish it. But how realistic is that immediately? Because this motherfucker's out here, and that's smart people saying that shit. Them college students saying that shit. You got some money in your bank account. You might be college student broke, but you ain't from the hood broke. I ain't hood ass broke. The motherfuckers coming in them stores, they ass be 50 cent. Man, thanks for that blessing, big bro. Man, I appreciate you, big, but like, it's a whole nother level of broke. They not trying to abolish shit. Because, you know what I'm saying? They just trying to get something to eat. And we got the ability to compete to the point where motherfuckers ain't fucked up out here to the point where we got to go commit acts of crime and violence. We can do that for ourselves. Because again, them opportunity rich buildings are still there. Just ain't no businesses in them. The white folks left. They took their businesses with them. Cool. Cool. They built it for their own. We stuck being consumers, or we gonna produce something, and then we gonna circulate with each other or not. And I don't say that from a way of like, here's what's wrong with people. No, it's like I see it as an opportunity, and I'm so grateful to be my age. I ain't no old ass man looking back like, boy, I'm young. I got energy. Boy, we about to open a whole nother business, and then another one. And then another one. And then another one. I see it as an opportunity, man. I see it as an opportunity. You know, so when I think about where does restorative justice play a role in all of this, it's the peace circles. And the restorative justice is the culture that love-based people will have. Because I don't trust them punitive-minded people to run the new culture after they demolish the next one. Because you're going to be the next people with power. Look at how you look at your punitive approach to justice. Which is why the people who have caused the harm historically aren't accepting accountability. Because you're taking a punitive approach to it. A punitive approach. So that's the role that restorative justice has. Well, you got to be whole in order to get to the next culture. A bunch of whole, in my opinion, a bunch of whole people. Boy, that's the new culture. That's the culture. That's the culture.
And that's there, bro. Like, I mean, and once again, definitely appreciate you, you know, sharing your thoughts, right? and feeling that this is a space that you can do so, right? Because that's something that, you know, we strive to create, because in this essence, we are ourselves still learning and adapting, and in being willing, right, to learn and to challenge, I think is truly where we then try being those whole people you're talking about. So just appreciate you, bro. And I feel honored to, you know, be able to listen to you. And I know folks checking in and zooming in, I don't know where they are emotionally or not, but, you know, it's definitely a call to action within ourselves, right? To the, if we want to be able to truly tackle and dismantle this massive ass system, you know, we've been knowing this, but it does start with us, you know. And it's interesting that the way you did it was, you're like, your fam is still the same, right? But I remember my uncle when I was younger, you know, I was living with him for a time, and his whole thing was, it has to get to a point where someone rips his chain. And he was referring to generationals, right? He's like, there's a reason why, you know, you're first generation here, this, that, the fifth. But listening to you and just in processing here with y'all, you know, I don't necessarily think that's necessarily a generational thing. I think it's where you find it and when it happens, right? Because I'm in a position right now where I'm not getting this diluted version, right? I'm getting the sauce from the man who's been heating up for 14 years. You know what I'm saying? So I just want to give you that praise, give you that time. And really, I'd love to give you an opportunity to just tell a little bit of folks of where they can find Trap House, any moves that are happening, how they connect, and how in their own spaces, you know, you might recommend that they get engaged.
So on Instagram, Trap House Chicago, just follow. You'll see the merch drops. Proceeds from the merch go towards our restore project, RE:store, right, project. We have events that's all love-based events. Peace Circles, Peace Circle Series, and Circle Keeper Training. All right, pull up to any of those. Some of them cost, some don't. The Red Summer Project, myself and three of my brothers, the Honorable Hakim Doe, Heavy Crowns, Paris Williams. We traveled for a whole month, 27 cities, 33 days, 2019, the centennial of the Red Summer Race Riots, street performing, keeping peace circles, just loving on people. We had no idea that 2020 was the 2020 that 2020 was. And we intentionally went around to build and strengthen relationships with people. Those episodes are dropping once a week. It's a docu-series. Definitely tap in with that. It's Local Legend Films. It's the company that is, you know, putting it together. Mashaun Ali, MASHAUN _ALI on Instagram. You can see the restorative justice content and everything that we got going on. TrapHouseChicago.us is the website.
Slide, pull up, come through, get you some merch, rocking these streets and these digital streets as well.
Come on, 79th and Cottage is where we located at. 744 East 79th Street. A beautiful community. We're about to open up businesses on businesses. So come on.
Bro, I know, you know, and I'll let Colin speak. But once again, man, I really appreciate you hanging out with us. I really appreciate you giving us moments, being real with us. And, you know, that only makes me want to continue to be realer, not only with you, but with everybody, you know, and understanding myself, understanding others, and really valuing love over everything, even if I'm angry, right? Because, you know, that's clearly the crux for David today. But what the goal is to go beyond that, right? And if you took, you know, you took 14 years, I got some time. So I'll be patient, right? I'll start right now learning that.
You've been started. Here's some more credit. You've been started.
You know, just
be on the journey.
Hey, yo.
Making the path.
Let's go. Finding people like Mashaun, you know, to help us. Exactly. And so without further ado, you know, this is Bourbon Bronton. Keep peeping us out. All things and information will be also available on the episode notes. Please peep that out. Soapboxpo.com/podcast and wherever you find podcasts. For Bourbon and Bronton, as always, stay black, stay brown, stay queer.
Stay tuned, stay turnt.
See you next time.
Talk to these young niggas once in a while. Remember that you too once were a child. Growth is apparent. I know shooters didn't grow up with both of their parents. It still takes a village. Africa needs us. They still taking villages. Raping and pillaging. Praying and pilgriming. Ain't nothing new to it except that we filming it.
Bourbon and Bronton is engineered by Genta Tamashiro. For more credits, information on episode guests, related media, and topics, check the episode notes. Follow us on social media at Bourbon, the letter N, Bronton, or visit soapboxpo.com/podcast.
For any and all things Soapbox Productions and Organizing, follow us at Soapbox PO on all social media and visit soapboxpo.com.